All right, welcome to CCNA 1, Module 10. I think we're up to Module 10. Everybody happy with Module 10? Well, the fact that we're up to it? Okay. This is going to be one of those horrible interactive lectures. How many bits in an IP address? Anybody tell me?
32. Or time.
Yes, we have a 32 from Attila, and we have a 32 from 32. Somebody else that I haven't looked at. Yeah, yep, excellent. Just to be nasty, how many bits in an IPv6 address? Anybody remember? You don't have to, it's not in the course.
128.
Ah, well done. Yeah, there you go. Throw enough mud at a wall and it'll stick. Okay. Class A subnet. Class A subnet, I did go through this, I think, last week, but we'll see how good everybody is. Class A range is 1 to what?
123.
No, you're out by 1, Mr. Legg. Now, this is very important. The class A range is 1 to 127, and 127, even though 127.0.0.1 is the local host address, the 127 subnet is a class A subnet, and it is validly a class A subnet. Okay, now the first bits of a... the way you can work this out is the first bits of a class A address. Can anybody tell me what the first bit of a class A address is?
A zero?
That's correct. Okay. Now, class B addresses. Can anybody tell me the range for class B addresses? I want two numbers. Yeah, I want to know what the first octet range of a class B is.
128 to 191.
Oh dear, oh dear, Attila, have you been studying these by the open fire or something, have you? Doing well this morning. Okay, the range of a class B address is 128 to 191. The first bits of a class B address are 10 in the first octet. Now, you're not going to learn all this straight away, but I'm going to keep hammering it every week for the next 5 weeks, and eventually you will know it. Just by the fact that I keep going on about it so much, you will get these classes and you'll just see them and go, I know what range that is. So class A, 1 to 127, and the subnet mask of a class A network is, yes, she of the lightning fingers has put it in, 255.0.0.0. Now, it's worth noting that the Class A has the biggest range of IP addresses, 1 to 127. Class B has the second biggest range, 128 to 191. And Class C has a range of, anybody tell me? 192 to 223. Now, the only reason it's not 224 is because the first bits of a Class C address have to be 110, and if it was 224, it would be 111, which would then be multicast. So, out by one, but very good. Okay, just because I'm feeling scummy this morning, can anybody tell me the range for multicast addresses? And you don't have to know them, but somebody might. Yep, and the something on that would be 9. Okay, now if you take all of those numbers down at some point, or maybe I'll post something to the announce list, and you actually convert them to binary, you'll be able to see the bit patterns on the left-hand side as they change, which is not very exciting, but it will show you how this system works, okay? Subnet mask for a Class C network is 255.255.255.0. What is the maximum number of hosts you can have on a Class C network?
254.
That is correct. All right. How about, can anybody give me an example of a reserved IP address range that can be used for private non-routable traffic? Okay, I have two of the ranges, an example of two of the ranges. Can anybody give me an example of the third range? Okay, 172.16, not 172.168. In fact, the range of the privately routable block in that range is 172.16 to 172.31. Now, I don't expect you to know... I don't expect you to know all of these ranges off the back of your hand like Attila does. He wins the Virtual Lollipop of the Day award today. But you really, when you see IP addresses, you should eventually start recognizing the non-routable IP addresses, and you will see that you'll recognize them, go 192.168, okay, that's non-routable, 172.21, that's non-routable, 10.4.9, that's unroutable. And that will come purely with practice. But you will see these addresses, and you'll see them a lot. Non-routable means that the addresses will not be routed on the internet, and they should not be forwarded by internet-connected routers. You will find, however, that there are a lot of ISPs that just hand things off to the default gateway, and you can actually get 192.168 addresses about five hops before they die. Badly configured routers, and I would hope that students who are studying this course would not be configuring internet accessible routers to forward 192.168 traffic. What technology would you be using to allow 192.168 or 10.dlink.dlink.dlink addresses to access the internet? That's correct. NAT or Network Address Translation. Okie dokies. Now, I think that's a pretty good revision from last week, was it? It seems so much longer ago. No, was it the week before? No, it was last week. I did the lecture from home, that's right. I had a cup of coffee and everything. Okay. Lucky this isn't video conferencing. Anybody got any questions before we continue on to Module 10? Have I mystified anybody? Or I know some people aren't quite up to this module, but they're still doing fairly well nonetheless. But any questions before I embark on the treacherous path of Module 10? Yes, and hello to Ruby, and also hello to Enable, who might be feeling a bit left out there because they haven't been greeted by Sue. So hello, Enable. I'll greet you as well.
Good morning, everyone.
There we go. We're all happy now. Okay. Anybody who didn't get a welcome, we're sorry. That's just how it is, okay? Now.
Welcome to our world.
It's waiting
Won't
for you.
Won't you come on in?
I thought we were going to escape from the singing today, but it doesn't seem as though...
No such luck.
Okay. Now. Module 10. Welcome to Module 10. Module 10 talks about the internet and routing protocols and stuff like that. The protocol suite that runs on the internet is known as the TCP/IP protocol suite. Suite, S-U-I-T-E, not sweet as in the apple, the apricot Danish I had for morning tea. Okay, S-U-I-T-E, suite. A suite of protocols is a collection of protocols that can be used together or sometimes in isolation to perform various networking tasks, which is why it's called a protocol suite. Now, protocols such as IP and IPX, SPX is a bit of a funny one, but we'll go with IP. Can anybody tell me at what level of the OSI reference model IP works?
Level 3?
Yes.
Bing! Level 3, IP addresses, IP, network routing.
Okay, level 3. That was a very bad elevator message. Let's move on. I will not go Bing level 4, transport, end-to-end error detection and correction. Oh, maybe I will. Anyway, that's next week. Okay. And can anybody tell me at what layer of the OSI reference model do MAC addresses work?
Level 2.
Ah, you're all on fire this morning. I should be able to see the flares of the intellect from here. Well done, everyone. Level 2. We're sick of the elevator joke now. Now, level 2 is your data link layer, and level 3 is your network layer. There is a protocol in the TCP/IP protocol suite that maps IP addresses to hardware addresses or MAC addresses. That protocol is called, and I'll take the TLA, or the three-letter acronym. You don't have to type out the whole protocol. Okay, anybody else come up with an answer for that, or are we just going to cheat and read Gemma's answer? What Gemma said. And what did Gemma say, Chris? Yes, you've saved yourself there, because now you have to know this, guys. The protocol that maps IP addresses, hardware addresses, yeah, IP addresses to hardware addresses. Let me make sure I get that right. Who has, okay, it maps IP addresses to hardware addresses. Yep, that is what it does. That is ARP. And let me assure you, that is in your final exam. It is in your final exam. If you want an easy couple of marks, you must know the answer to that one.
And you've got to know the difference between ARP and RAP, because they like to trick you on that one.
They certainly do. They certainly do. And RAP is the one that maps a hardware address back to an IP address. It is one of the protocols used for address discovery. It's often used by printers and low-complexity devices such as Jet Direct cards. Anybody know what a Jet Direct card is? Anyone? Oh, yes, your experience is shining like a beacony-looking thing, okay? That's what they are. They are an internal network server card for HP printers. In fact, they are HP Jet Direct cards, and they've probably got Rs and TMs and stuff after them, so HP, call your lawyers back, okay? HP Jet Direct cards. The newer revisions of the firmware in Jet Direct cards can obtain their IP addresses via what protocol? But it isn't RAP. I'll accept the four-letter acronym. Address, it's an address, yay, DHCP, which stands for Dynamic Host Control Protocol. I've got a book on it in a plastic crate somewhere that I've really got to get around to scanning. Don't know when that'll happen, when we get a quieter scanner. Okay, now you've got Class A, you've got Class B, and you've got Class C IP addresses. What is the maximum number of IP addresses you can have on a Class B network?
65,534.
Okay, 65,534. 2 to the power of 16 minus 2. And because power has higher mathematical precedence than subtraction, you do to the 2 to the power of 16 before you subtract the 2. So 2 to the power of 16 is 65,536. Minus 2 is 65,534. This will become important when you do your subnetting, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in this module, and we may spend a couple of weeks talking about that. Okay, I've already been told that we can have 254 hosts on a Class C network. That is 2 to the power of 8 minus 2. Okay. Now, there are a number of protocols in the TCP/IP protocol suite, but before we get on to those, we need to differentiate the terms routing protocol and routed protocol. The words sound similar, look different, and mean different things. A routing protocol is a protocol that is used to configure routers and routing tables. It is a protocol that discovers topologies, network layouts, and propagates routing information. A routed protocol is a protocol that is routed using the routing protocol. Everyone clear with that?
So if it's routed, it means that it's already configured?
No. If it's routed, it means that the packets have been are able to be sent to their destination, but routed protocols are sent to their destination often using routing protocols, because routing is the present tense of routed. Therefore, the routing protocol is what's responsible for looking at the network topology, whereas a routed protocol, or as I like to say, routed, has already been routed over the network by one of the routing protocols.
Got it.
Okay, so TCP, for example, is a routed protocol. Whatever whatever you've got as far as static routes and stuff, if you open a telnet session from one host to another, the TCP protocol is used for telnet, and the packets that go from source to destination are routed using the routing protocols. Now, there are examples of routing protocols, and those examples are RIP, or Routing Information Protocol, BGP, or Border Gateway Protocol, IGRP, or Interior Gateway Routing Protocol, or EIGRP, which is Enhanced Interior Gateway Routing Protocol.
Enhanced Interior Gateway Routing Protocol.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. Excellent. And there are also other ones like OSPF. Can anybody tell me what OSPF stands for? You probably shouldn't be able to. Gemma might be able to, though. Googling is cheating.
What?
What's OSPF stand for? Any idea? Anyone?
Open Shortest Path First?
Yes, you do not need to sound hesitant. That is absolutely 100% correct. And OSPF uses the Dijkstra algorithm, which is some Dutch bloke that came up with it. Anyway, you do that in CCNA 3, but we're not going to go into that too heavily now. But a lot of people who have home routers, especially D-Links, will have noticed that there are checkboxes or drop-down boxes and stuff to enable protocols such as RIP version 1 and RIP version 2. Anybody seen that digging through their router configuration interfaces? Unless you know what you're doing, you should not be checking those boxes, because those protocols are not usually handled by most ISPs. Now, there are two sorts of routing protocols, and I cover these briefly here, and then we flog them to death in CCNA 3. One of them is distance vector, and the other is link state. Distance vector routing protocols send a copy of their routing table or portions of their routing table to neighboring devices, and they use a metric to figure out how far away hosts are. And the metric for RIP version 1 is hop count, which is not how many times Skippy's bounced up and down. It's how many hops away from you the actual computer is. Now, if you're on a home network, for example, how many hops away from your computer is your ADSL router? And how many hops away is your ISP's dial-in server or ADSL DSLAM? Yes, that's absolutely correct. How many hops from you to Cisco.com? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, can anybody tell me one of the tools that will show you? That's because Cisco.com drops trace routes. Google.com doesn't drop trace routes. Google.com, you should be able to trace route to Google.com. We don't necessarily need you to do that. And I've just ruined the next question I was going to ask, so I'm not a happy chappy at the moment. I was going to ask you, what is the utility that will allow you to figure out how many hops between you and a destination host? Anybody for an easy cyber lollipop, tell me what it is. Absolutely. And under Windows, you spell it T-R-A-C-E-R-T. And under Linux, you spell out the full word trace route. Or you type trace R and hit the tab button. Now, next semester, if we all get through this semester intact, we will actually be doing ITE2, and in ITE2 you actually get to play with traceroute. In fact, you get to play with it in CCNA2 as well. And you will also get to play with Linux servers, and you'll be able to type commands into the Linux servers and get them to traceroute from one place to another. Okay. Now, when we talk about routing and routed protocols, can anybody give me another example of a routed protocol that is not TCP/IP based? It's a few years old now, and it's not used very commonly, but what are games? No, I'm sorry, I must knock that one on the head. No, I've got to knock that one on the head too. NetBIOS is not routable. IPX is, though. IPX, SPX. And AppleTalk is routable as well. NetBIOS over TCP/IP is routable, but it's got some funny restrictions, and I don't really want to talk about that because we could have a whole lecture on whether it is or isn't routable or not. And Microsoft keep changing the way they've decided to implement NetBIOS, and they also keep changing the name of it. So, instead of calling it NetBIOS, they call it SIFS. Which is the Common Internet File System But yeah, it NetBIOS over TCP is routable. NetBIOS over NetBUI, NetBeui, for those who haven't sort of spelled out their chat window lately, that is not routable. And NetBUI was an old, very minimal NetBIOS transport protocol that was used on local area networks under Windows 3.1 and Windows 3.11. It still exists on recent versions of Windows, however, enabling it can cause all sorts of havoc because it often takes precedence over the protocols you would rather be using for file sharing. Okie dokie. IP addresses are 32 bits long. I didn't quite get to doing all of the notes for this module, so we're winging this one. So if I miss something, somebody can harangue me next week and we'll come back and do it. An IP address is 32 bits long, and it is made up of two portions. Can anybody tell me what the two portions of an IP address are called? And I'll accept one at a time.
Network address and host address.
Okay, the Perth powerhouse is belting... Yeah, the Perth powerhouse is certainly tapping out those chat messages faster than you can say what are the two portions of an IP address, and doing well. And yes, you're absolutely correct. There's the network ID, or the network portion, and the host portion. Can anybody tell me how many, what is the thing that tells you how big the network portion is and how big the host portion is? You've probably done this at TAFE before, Mr. Legg, haven't you? Yeah, right. No, you do actually sometimes. Okay, subnet mask. Yeah, that sounds more realistic. Bet you guys have got MSN whiteboard open and she's showing you all the answers. Or net meeting. Okay, network ID, host ID, and there's a subnet mask. And can anybody tell me what's special about a subnet mask? What's special about the way it's laid out or whatever, and why is it called a mask?
The ones represent the network portion and zeros represent the host portion.
Oh, righty, mate, you're on fire this morning. Have you managed to get hold of my Zippo, have you? Okay. The ones represent the network portion of the address, and the zeros represent the host portion of an address. An example of a subnet mask is something along the lines of 255.255.0.0. This says that 16 bits of the network portion represent the network portion and 16 bits represent the host portion. What is the maximum number of hosts on a network with a subnet mask of 255.255.0.0? The maximum number of hosts, not the maximum number of usable addresses. Remember what I said... Absolutely correct. Remember what I said about 2 to the power of 16 minus 2. Now I'm going to explain why it's minus 2 now, because I bet you the next question I was going to get is, why minus 2? Okay. Let us take the... somebody got bored this morning and pre-read the chapter, didn't they? Okay. That's assuming that we are dealing with a Class C subnet. What it would be more accurate to say that if all of the bits in the host portion of the network are set to 0, it's the network address. And if they are all set to 1 in the host portion, it is the broadcast address. Okay, so what is the network address of a network that is a Class C network with an IP address of 192.168.20.53? Anybody got any questions on that? Because Chris is along with us, but I'm not sure about the rest of you. Ah, yes. I didn't say that sitting in on Module 10 wouldn't be like treading water in honey. But you can always download these and stick them on your iReaver, and as I say, catch 40 winks or something. I wonder how many of these photos are going to have the dog in them. Okay. Yes, it probably will. You'll be off to sleep in no time at all. Okay, so if all of the host bits in a network are set to 0, that is the network address. This address refers to the entire network. Can anybody tell me when you would want to refer to the entire network? To identify subnets, and why would you want to identify subnets? No, that's the broadcast address that lets you broadcast to the whole subnet.
Duh!
And they take photos of the dogs rolling around. Okie dokie. What sort of thing would require you to refer to the whole subnet? Can anybody give me an idea? And I've used the word earlier today. Okay. Routing is the answer I wanted. And routing is the process of getting packets from one network to another. So let's have a little story here. Chris has decided to move out of home and he's managed to buy the unit next door. I don't know how he did that, but he managed it. And, well, we don't trust Chris that much, so he's going to have his stuff on his subnet, which will be 10.0.0.0 because he's got a D-Link, and we're going to have ours on our subnet, which is 192.168.24.whatever, because we're sophisticated and we have a billion. Yes, he probably will hack me, but one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to have a firewall router between our networks to prevent those sorts of nasty, nasty attacks. And what that router is going to do is it's only going to allow certain packets to travel between the 10.0.0 network and the 192.168.24 network. Now, most of CCNA2 is going to concern itself with how to configure Cisco routers, and the job of a Cisco router is to transfer packets from one network to another, or in fact, the job of a router is to transfer packets from one network to another. Why would you want to break a network into smaller subnets and use routers? What would be one of the reasons for doing that? Yeah, to relieve traffic congestion. And what's another thing that it will do to the network if you break the network into smaller subnets?
Make the broadcast area smaller.
That's right. It will make the broadcast domain smaller by limiting the number of hosts in a broadcast domain. If you have a router between two subnets, you are separating it into two broadcast domains. In other words, broadcasts will not travel between these domains unless you configure the router specifically to do it, and you have to have a very good reason for doing it. And there are protocols such as bonjour, monsieur, and bonjour and various other discovery protocols do make extensive use of broadcasts. I was going to say s'il vous plaît. Anyway. But the only thing I learned in French was un glace à la fraise, s'il vous plaît, which was a strawberry ice cream, if you please. I don't even like strawberry ice cream that much. I suppose I could go un glace au chocolat. That would be a better idea. Okay. No, I can actually make it sound seedier than that, but I'm behaving. Okay. Lost my train of thought. Subnets, broadcast domains, routing things around, as wide a subnet and limiting the size of the broadcast domains. And, oh yes, protocols such as Bonjour, that's where I was up to, make extensive use of broadcasting, and that's so you can turn on your Mac and it can find your iTunes library on your network. Okay. And there are other protocols such as NetBIOS's name resolution protocols and things that use broadcasts. And there's another thing that uses broadcasts, and I mentioned it earlier today, and it's a three-letter acronym. Can anybody think of what that protocol would be that would use Ethernet-level broadcasts? That's exactly right. ARP uses broadcasts. It sends out a message that says, who has an IP address? And then the machine replies with, that IP address is at hardware, MAC address. Okay. Now, MAC addresses are only relevant when you are routing inside the local subnet or inside the local area network. Once you send data outside the local area network, you can strip the MAC addresses off and you don't need them unless you are routing over multiple Ethernet networks. And there are protocols such as PPP PPP over dial-up and PPP over serial links that do not use MAC addresses because they're not relevant to those protocols. Anybody tell me how long a MAC address is?
48 bits.
Okay. And the MAC address is also known as a hardware address, and it is usually burned into the ROM of a network card. We have to say burned because it's far more graphic, and in the old days they actually did used to burn them, otherwise you'd just say programmed and it wouldn't be anywhere near as exciting. Okay, subnetting is the ability to break multiple a network allocation block into multiple subnets so that you can have different things on it. And usually when you talk about subnets, people talk about the maths department, not trusting the physics department, and nobody trusting the psychiatric department and all that sort of thing. So you create subnets to keep the traffic segregated and as a security requirement so that traffic doesn't flow to networks that it shouldn't be on. Okay. If you are subnetting a network, you need to know about the IP address and the subnet mask. If you take an IP address and you AND it with the subnet mask, what are you left with? Apart from a headache. Did you know that one, or was that a quick Google? Ah, yes. Well, I'll believe that when I see it. What did I have for breakfast this morning? No, I didn't. I had Sultana bran. Anyway, that's not relevant to... That's an interesting taste sensation. We don't have
I
any...
I could have run and checked, but I just took a guess instead.
Well, I actually got the Sultana bran out of your container, so you would have had to check the level of it.
Ah. Oh, you tricked me.
Yeah, anything to keep you on your toes. Okay. If we are subnetting and we AND the IP address... Sorry, did somebody want to say something? Okay, silence is golden and will be crushed out when I do a remove silence between phrases in SoundForge. I meant to ask people, are they happy with the fact that we pull all the silence out of them? Does everybody like the lectures with the silence removed, so it's sort of all rapid fire and you don't get to hear people think and stuff, or is it a bit much? Okay, that's good. And obviously you can also play 44,000. So I'll be sitting on a Melbourne train and you'll be listening to this lecture and I'll hear and then I'll hear this, the noise will stop and you'll go, I know that one. I know that one. Just unpause it. Which is what I'd do. I'd probably... Yeah, exactly. Okay, so if you're going to subnet things, you are going to borrow bits from various places and you're going to use them for other things, which all sounds very sinister, doesn't it? Okay. So let's assume that we have a Class C network, which is 255.255.255.0, which has a maximum of 254 hosts, because the host with all the bits set to 0 is the network address, and the one with the bits all set to 1 is the broadcast address. Can anybody tell me what the broadcast address is used for?
Broadcasting?
Yeah, but what do you do when you get a broadcast? Where does
hello, sending out? Message outside the local area network.
It sends to all hosts on the current TCP/IP subnet. Yeah, it's actually on that subnet because you can pull nasty tricks with things like proxy up and actually make them split the network in half and forward these things across the router, and it's heavy voodoo and you probably shouldn't do it, but sometimes it's the easiest way out of a nasty situation. Okay, so you send to all of the hosts on that subnet. So the broadcast address of the 192.168.1 network is, assuming a Class C subnet mask? Absolutely. And you're typing on a full-size keyboard, so you've got an advantage over Chris because he's typing on an EEP. I reckon we should stick you both on EEPs and you can have EEP type wars next week. Okay. Yeah, that'll be right. Okay. So the broadcast address is 192.168.1.255. Let us assume that we wanted to split a network of 192.168.1.0 into for subnets. Can anybody tell me what the subnet mask would have to be to do that? That is correct. You would have to have a subnet mask of 255.255.255.192. And this is where pegboards come in handy. And we did ask last week whether anybody needed any pegboards, and if you do, you send us an email, and they cost $20. Probably a bit more once we put the postage in. They cost $30. There we go. They cost $30 if you want a pegboard. 255.255.255.192. And if you look at that, it actually has eight lots of ones, dot eight lots of ones, dot eight lots of ones, dot, and then it has, I'm just making sure I get this right, two ones and six zeros. In other words, 26 ones on the left-hand side and six zeros on the right-hand side if you convert the subnet mask to binary. How many IP addresses would be on these subnets if we had four subnets taken out of a network of a Class C size? Okay. And how did you get to that result? I'm just curious to know. Probably Chris or would... you said 2 to the power of 6 because there were 6 zeros. Is that correct? On the right-hand side of the... of the subnet mask? That's exactly correct. You can see that. Oh, I'm glad you both agree. Okay. I don't want a lollipop. I had a bounty, but I think I ate it.
Oh no, I've got the chocolates here.
No, you won't. Come on. That's now. We don't need you. We don't need bounty eating noises on chat. Okay. Now. 2 to the power of 6 is how we figure out how many IP addresses are going to be on that subnet, and it's going to tell us, and which means we're going to have how many hosts? No? Remember? That's correct, 62. Because on each subnet we have a network address at the bottom and a broadcast address at the top, and therefore it is 2 to the power of 6 minus 2, which is 2 to the power of 6 is 64, and minus 2 is 62. Everybody kind of happy with that? Okay. If you have a subnet which is 255.255.255.0, in other words, you have a subnet that can have 256 usable addresses on it, and you are going to split the subnet into four, you want four subnets, 256 divided by 4 is 64. Therefore, each of the subnets that you have made can have 64 usable addresses. On each subnet, there is a address reserved for the network address and the broadcast address, and therefore 64 minus 2 is 62. Now I must stress that it is imperative to read the notes on this as well as going on with what I'm on about, because they will show worked examples and stuff of subnetting. Now the Cisco notes tell us, and they actually change their mind on this later on in the course, but for the moment you cannot use the bottom subnet because it's could be confused with the network address, and everybody does. And you can't use the top subnet because it could be confused with the broadcast address, but everybody does. But as far as the test is concerned, if you are going to split a network into four subnets, there are only two of those subnets that are usable, because you cannot use the bottom and the top subnets in CCNA 1. When we move to CCNA 3, we will do variable length subnet masks, and this restriction will be lifted. Okay, so if we have a subnet mask of 255.255.255.240, how many hosts are in those subnets? Okay, the answer is 14, obviously 16 usable IP addresses minus the reserved ones for network and broadcast. So, the way I would work that out is 255.255.255.240, 256 minus 240 is 16. How many subnets are there on a network like this? Okay. Now, what you will find is that if there are 16 hosts on the subnet, how many subnets are there? How many possible subnets are there? Notice I said possible, not usable. We have a subnet that is subnetted from 256 IP addresses, and it is subnetted into 16 networks. And how many of those subnets are usable? That is correct. I think I wrote up a subnet exercise somewhere I have to find and send to the mailing list, because, to be honest, guys, the only way you're going to become anywhere familiar with this is to practice it. And for the first while, it is going to be as confusing as anything, and then all of a sudden there'll be this incredible clink and the penny will drop, and it will all become amazingly clear to you.
Mine was in the middle of Perth train station.
I think I was there for that, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were explaining things to me.
Yeah, well, that's pretty standard. I'm usually explaining things to you of one description or another. Chris and Gemma call me Mr. Science. Okay. Does anybody have any questions? Because unless people have read the notes, I think that's about as far as we want to go this week. That is most of the contents of Module 10, however.
Can we have a step-by-step to do a subnet mask?
Sort of. What sort of subnet example would you like? Because I've got to come up with some funny numbers and stuff for you to do. What would you like to do? Okay. Say, for example, we have a class B network, which is 255.255.0.0, and we wish to can anybody tell me the maximum number of hosts on the class B network?
65,534.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Everyone happy with that? Okay. Now,
and say we have 5 segments.
No. Now that's a gotcha. You've got to have the number of subnets has to be a power of 2, which is interesting. But they have to be a power of 2 because you are using a binary mask. So how about we have 8 segments?
But if we have a network with 5,000 hosts in each segment, and we have 5 segments. So what would be the closest subnet mask so we could use over the 5 segments?
If you had a network that had 5,000 hosts in its subnet, you would have to put the subnets on an 8,192 sized subnet, because it has to be the next power of 2 above the number of hosts you've got. So if you have 258 hosts, you've got to put them on a subnet that has 512 available addresses.
Right. I'm only giving this example because last week Geraldine told us to go to this website to learn about subnets, and I was listening to the lectures but I don't understand them very well, and one of them was that there were 5 segments with 5,000 hosts, and he got a subnet mask of 224, which will do 6 segments.
Okay. All right, let's work this.
And it did have 8,000 hosts in each, belonging to each segment.
Okay, one of the things you've got to keep in mind with a subnet mask is that whatever number of hosts you've got, you need to have the other number of bits in the network portion and the host portion. So say, for example, we've got 8,192. Now, 8192 is, let me think, 2 to the power of 13? Does that sound about right? Let's see, 2 to the power of 10 is 1024.
Sounds
right
to me.
2 to the power of 11 is 2048. 2 to the power of 12 is 4096. 2 to the power of 13 is 8192. Therefore, we have 13 bits in the host portion because we have to have 8,192 hosts per subnet, and therefore we have 19 bits in the network portion. So 19 and 13 is 32, I hope. It is, you know. Okay. So, if you have 13 bits in the host portion and you have 19 bits in the network portion, you have 255.255, which has given you 16 of the bits, dot, now you need another 3 bits, so 128 plus 64... plus 32 is indeed 224, so you end up with a subnet mask of 255.255.224.0. Okay, that's a pretty advanced example, and you might want to start off with the simpler ones, but basically what we're saying is that all of the bits that are set to 1 on the subnet mask have to be on the left-hand side of it. The number of bits always have to add up to 32, so you need to take into consideration the size of your subnet masks on the right-hand side, in other words, how many hosts you need, subtract that from 32, and that will tell you how many ones you need on the left-hand side. So, in Attila's example, we wanted 8,192 hosts, which is 2 to the power of 13. 32 minus 13 is 19, therefore we need 19 ones on the left-hand side and 13 zeros on the right-hand side. If, for example, we wanted a Class C network, which is 255.255.255.0, we want 256 hosts, which is 2 to the power of 8. 32 minus 8 is 24, therefore we have 24 ones on the left-hand side and 8 zeros on the right-hand side if we convert the subnet mask to binary. Hopefully that should be as clear as mud. Okay. Now, I think it's probably going to be better that we work some examples and stuff. I think I actually did an example for the lists. It's in last year's archive, but I won't be that cruel. I'll repost it. And we will we'll get you guys to have a look through the worked example, and then I will I'll show you. We'll have a look at it and see how you guys go with that. Now, you know how I said that thing about how all the binary you did in Module 1 had become really, really important? Well, here's where it becomes really, really important. The reason that the binary becomes very, very important is because it's very quick to do logical operations in hardware. It's very quick to do ANDs and ORs and things and shifts and stuff in hardware. And when routers are routing thousands of packets per second, they need to do it very quickly. And if they can make the routing decisions very quickly, that's why they designed the subnetting system like this. Also remember that if you multiply the number of usable addresses per subnet by the number of subnets, you should get a number that would equal the same value as the host portion of the subnet bit set to 1. So I'll explain that. If you've got 16 subnets of 16 hosts, 16 by 16 is 256, which would be what you would get if you set all of the bits on the right-hand portion of the subnet mask to 1. Although I must confess my brain hurts, so perhaps that's a little bit advanced, and we'll get to that in a couple of weeks. Has anybody got any questions before I finish for today and post the subnet example to the mailing list. Okay, I'll take that as a no, and we will be going back over this for a bit next week anyway, and I'll try and get those examples posted, and I believe there is a there is an exercise that you can do with the subnetting that we did last year, and we'll post that to the list, and you should send your answers to cavi-instructors, not back to the discuss list. So hit reply and you die, or something like that. But so do send it to Cavi Instructors. Do not send it to the... Yeah, I'm doing that. That's going to go on the announce list in a minute. I can't talk and type at the same time. So we'll certainly send that to you in a minute. It's also covered in your notes, and it is also covered in the module diagram description, so also look there. But I will send an example of that to the mailing list, and I really want people to have a good look at this before next week, because I don't want to be I want to keep the number of mega confused people to a minimum. And if you guys want to work together on working this out, we'll be able to turn the mega confused people into people who understand a lot quicker, and everyone will be happy. Yeah, everyone's confused to begin with, believe me. And it will become clear to you, and we'll post the examples that have been typed out. I have worked through an example, and do also follow some of those web links, because some of those subnetting sites are very useful. And I think Christopher McMillan posted some subnetting sites to the mailing list archive earlier this year, and I'd strongly recommend that people have a look at those sites as well. Okay, any questions before we hit the stop button?
Yeah, if you got a class C and you got 255.255.255.0 and you get the subnet mask, where do you put the host ID? In the remaining bits in the fourth octet?
Now, just answer Ruby's question first, and your question is under advisement, Attila. I will get to that in a second. Yes, then the module will go up hopefully later on this afternoon. Who just mic'd up then? All of the lectures are available on the internet for you to download. That's why we have a website. So, and in fact, we would encourage you, when you can, whoever happens to be out there in lecture land, to download all of the lectures and go back through them. And I know Geordie certainly does that on occasion. Okay, if you have a Class C subnet of 255.255.255.0, you are saying that 24 bits of the address refer to the network portion, and the 8 bits refer to the host ID. The network portion always goes on the left-hand side, for example 192.168.27, and the host portion goes on the right-hand side, so 192.168.27.53. It means that you are host 53 on the 192.168.27 network. Does that make a little bit more sense?
But where does the subnet mask go?
Mark, you're not allowed to use a subnet calculator when you're doing CCNA1. I realise it could be useful, and you can use it for illustrative purposes, but you're not allowed to use the calculator in the test, so just be aware of that.
I realised that. It was just very handy experimenting with all the different numbers. Showed me, gave me a really good understanding of how the subnetting actually worked.
Absolutely, and you can use it to check your answers, and you can use it to experiment. And that's certainly an excellent learning tool. Make sure that you do understand that. And I'm saying this to everybody, that it is you must know how this works inside your head. And if it helps you to understand, that's good. But you must be able to subnet without the subnet calculator. That's my only point. Now, the answer to your question, Attila, is that there are two pieces of information that you need to configure a TCP/IP. Network adapter. One of them is the IP address, and the other one is the subnet mask. And you put the IP address in the IP address field, and you put the net mask in the net mask field.
Now I got it. Thanks.
So if you go into your Windows IP configuration, and I'll just explain this in case somebody wants to try this, and you must be able to set it back. If your machine is set to obtain an IP address automatically, drop that down to be specify an IP address, and then look what shows up. You'll find that there is an IP address, a subnet mask, and a gateway address. And then when you've finished, make sure you change that radio back to obtain an IP address automatically and obtain DNS address automatically, if that's how it was set when you started.
The penny is slowly dropping.
Oh, yeah, that is a good idea. Now, one of the things I want to mention is that Wednesday's lecture, which is ITE 1 Module 10, is up on the QCAT website, and if for any reason that you missed Wednesday's lecture, and I'm staring very significantly at some people who may not have been able to be on for that, I would strongly recommend that you download that lecture, because it does discuss quite a lot of idiosyncrasies and details about call centres, and if you're looking at that sort of work, it might be something that could interest you. Alrighty. Any other questions? Otherwise, that's all I have for today. So, almost. Any other questions? All right. Silence is golden. We'll be back same bat time, same bat place next week, and we will be going over subnetting again. And I will repost the example to the mailing list. So, have a good weekend, everybody, and we will be available on Skype, although at 1 o'clock we go to lunch, and then we come back and we'll be available on Skype some more.
See you all on Wednesday.